Here in Michigan, guess what? Oprah and Kamala Harris pulled up for a feel-good session. A feel-good session. Shout out to my dog, Little Black Duck. I'm going to read those super chats shortly. They pulled up to Michigan for a feel-good session, y'all. So we're going to try to review a little bit of it. We can't go through the whole thing. And of course, I had the Michigan governor here too. Get on my freaking nerves. Anyways, let's go, y'all. Let's get to it. I'm going to try to get to the point where...
Shannon, well, South Asians for Harris, we inch our way over the finish line because we're going to be able...
I can, and I have to...
President, hello. Welcome to Michigan.
It's so good to be back. And Governor, thank you for everything you are and everything you do for the state. Thank you.
Thousand screens here representing people from all over the country.
Hi, everyone.
Can you feel it?
I can.
The joy rising in here?
I can. And
can you feel? Listen to what they're saying. This is a feel-good campaign. The same thing that they did. Dog, they taking the same playbook from Obama. It's a hope thing. It's a feel-good. Can you feel the love? All of the people. Now, you got to remember that before this, I'm going to give you all the cliff notes. Before this, they had all of the people from all over. They found a black simp. They found, you know, Southeast Asians for Kamala Harris. They brought all of these people in that they can find from every demographic. They handpicked them to sit there in the audience. They wanted to be diversity, equity, and inclusion. If you look in her background right there, you see old women, young women, black women, white women, gray-haired women. You're going to see some simps dotted in the audience behind her and Oprah. They're strategically placed because they want you to think that, hey, we're here for the joy. We're here for the love. Never mind what it costs you to go to the grocery store. Never mind the fact that you may be getting evicted. Never mind that you're getting repossessed. And never mind that you're running up the debt. They want this to be a love fest. Can you feel the joy rising in the air? That is the question that a professional journalist, Oprah, asked Kamala Harris the first thing that she came in.
I have to tell you, there's so much that I love about our campaign because it really is so about the people. And I look around at these screens, Oprah, I look at who's in the room, and this is America.
This is
America. You know, I was saying with a group of friends earlier, I think in this moment...
Night J, don't be disgusted.
So much that I think is quite exhausting around powerful forces that would try and divide us and try us to have us as Americans pointing fingers at each other.
Yes.
That this movement that is about reminding each other that we have so much more in common than what separates us.
Why does she keep saying that every day? Yo, anybody, can y'all give me a new campaign slogan? This just reminds me that we have so much more in common than separates us. It's the same thing. All she's doing is going on different platforms with different celebrities and campaigning based off of joy. No substance whatsoever. No substance whatsoever, bro.
It's so critically important. And this is about the strength of who we are as Americans. And this movement that we're in about, as I like to say, seeing in the face of a stranger, a neighbor.
Yes.
An extension of love thy neighbor, that you literally in the face of a stranger see a neighbor.
Yes.
And approach each other with that level of dignity and grace and kindness.
Well, that's exactly what happened with the Win with Black Women. I know you've known Joe Taker for many years.
Thank you, my
dear. That's exactly what happened.
He started it.
They had the big call and then said, let's open the door.
Yeah.
Let's open the door and invite everybody else in. And everybody actually came.
Organically.
Yes.
Organically. This is the beauty of our country. You know, there's so much at stake in this election. And ultimately, the question before us is, what kind of country do we want to live in? And the beauty of a democracy, as long as we can hold on to it, the beauty of a democracy is each of us has the power.
That's right.
To answer that question.
That's right. Everybody on this call and beyond has the power. But can I just start with this?
Yes, please.
I have to say this because in all of my private conversations...
Listen, bear with us, y'all. I'm waiting for the substance. This is my first time seeing this also. So we all watching this for the first time together. I'm waiting on the substance, okay?
100 times.
Yeah.
And everybody is saying it. You all have said it. I know you have. It seems to us that something happened to you the moment Joe Biden, President Biden, stepped aside and withdrew his candidacy, that a veil or something dropped and you just stepped into your power. I mean, literally, looking at you at a speech like the week before, which was a great speech, very nice, and then the next week, I saw you walking in the thing.
Y'all got to give me a moment. Whenever I take my glasses off and I start doing like this, they say I'm getting too frustrated and I need to go and lay down. They say I need to go to sleep and take a nap at that point because I'm too frustrated. So y'all got to give me some grace. Y'all got to give me some grace. We know Oprah. We know you got skinny. Shout out to OZ Oprah. We know what that means. Shout out to OZ Oprah. All right. We know you wanted to show off that you skinnier now and all of that. And so you wanted to strut it and all of that. What are we talking about? What are we talking about? What is this all about, bro? Honest to God, what is this all about? What does this mean?
And I said, what happened to you?
You know, we each have those moments in our lives where it's time to step up.
Time to step up.
Time to step up, you know?
Well, the moment you heard, I mean, I really have been saying to people, it felt like a veil dropped and you sort of stepped through that veil. Did you feel like that?
I felt a sense of responsibility, to be honest with you. And with that comes a sense of purpose. But I mean, we're all here and you all are taking time out of your busy lives, everyone here, everyone on the screen, because there really is so much at stake. You know, I have spent the majority of my career being concerned about the well-being of other people.
Yeah.
I used to like Tracee Ellis Ross. I did. I fell in love with Tracee Ellis Ross when I seen her on Girlfriends. I said, who is that shapely, older-looking woman on there? I have now fallen out of love with Tracee Ellis Ross. She is canceled from my list of women that I have on my list.
As I've said, in my career as a prosecutor, I never looked at a victim or a witness and ask them, are you a Republican?
Tell me if you heard this one before she says it. I've never looked at a victim or a witness on my list and asked them, are you a Republican or are you a Democrat? I've asked them, are you okay? Now, honest to God, on my father's grave, on my daughter's life, this is my first time watching this. So I'm reviewing it and watching it at the same time as you guys. Okay. Tell me if you heard this one before. I know my audience. I know y'all have seen it. I know we've seen her say this plenty of times on all of her rallies and all of her speeches and on her Democratic National Convention speech and on CNN and in her last interview. I've never, ever asked a person, whether they're Republican or Democrat, I've always asked them, are you okay? Hey, I'll bet the farm. I bet every single thing that I've ever... yes, I do know her lines. I bet the farm. I bet everything that I've ever made in my entire life. I put it on, I bet it. Just like betting on red at the roulette table. But always bet on black. I'm betting the farm that she's going to say, I've never asked them, are they Democrat or Republican? I've always asked them, are you okay? Let's see what she say. I'm betting it all, Alex. I'm betting the house.
I never looked at a victim or a witness and ask them, are you a Republican or a Democrat? The only thing I ever ask them is, are you okay?
Are you okay?
Give me my money. Give me my money. Give me my monies. Give me my money. We rich. We rich. We bet everything. We took a chance. We had a one in a million shot of getting this right. And we made. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I am now rich because I bet everything. I even took out credit card loans in order to bet that she was going to say this, and I just so happened to be prophetic. I'm rich.
Okay, I know when I heard that.
You know?
Touch me.
And traveling this country and knowing what is at stake in terms of fundamental freedoms, what's at stake in terms of fighting against hate and those efforts to divide us. Mm-hmm. And I do
what are we talking about,
know Joe? That I'm in a position to do something about it. So I felt a great responsibility. Mm-hmm. And the incredible power of the people, right? Who, you know, I'm not the only leader in this. We're all leaders in this. This is so much bigger than me. Mm-hmm. It's about who we are as Americans. And it's about
pants
making
the show.
Clear
pants
what
the show.
We stand for. And what we stand for is, it is about the ideals upon which we were founded, including the importance of freedom and the importance of independence and the importance of dignity and purpose. But it is also about what we stand for in terms of our values.
I don't even know what's going on.
I think
right
of
now.
It this
I think
way.
A lot boils down to values. I just said
it
values
really
are on the line here. Yes.
It does. I mean, think about it, Oprah.
Oprah is the last person to be talking about values. Y'all. Just saying.
The idea that some would suggest and that my opponent and it suggests, which is that the measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you beat down.
Not who you lift up.
Come on. The real measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you lift up.
I'm rich again. I doubled down, ladies and gentlemen. I'm rich. I'm rich. I'm rich. Listen, just because you remix it, and you put a come on. Let me tell you what we used to do. Let me tell you what the rappers used to do, right? So the people that would cheat, because let me tell you why it's so easy for us to identify this. This is why it's good to have street knowledge and book knowledge. You know how they say somebody is street smart or book smart? And this is what she did. I'm gonna play it again for y'all, and I'm gonna show you what she do. All right, watch this.
Suggest, which is that the measure of the strength of a leader is based on who you beat down. Come on. The real measure of...
So when you throw the come on in there, for example, right? Because what she would usually do is she used to say it word for word, and that was when she first memorized it, right? And so she would say, the measure of a leader is not who you beat down, it's who you lift up. And so now she kind of remixes it because she's been saying it so long. It's like a rapper that go into the crowd and say, put the microphone to the audience. Oh, and she says, the measure of a leader isn't who you beat down. Come on now, audience. I don't know what we're thinking. The measure of a leader is who you lift up. And so it's similar to what we used to do when we used to freestyle, right? And when you freestyle, the true freestylers would just come off the top of the dome and none of their stuff would be pre-written. But the ones that would finesse to make it seem like they was just better than everybody else, they would already had their stuff written and they memorize it so well to where they can kind of remix it and make it seem like they making it personal and they coming off the top of the dome. So they'll have parts in it where they can pause and that's when they can throw somebody's name in or they can throw what's going on in the location. So if you say, yo, 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 and then you start, I'm walking down the street, spitting out fire. I don't know him, dog, homie is a liar. So they start remixing. So instead of, yo, yo, I see Anton down there walking with the fire. The homie is a liar. So you start adding stuff in because you've memorized it so well to where you can improvise a speech and you make it seem like it's something new. And people are like, oh, dog, dog, he coming at you. Shit, dog. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Come on now. We all look, instead of just saying a speech straight out now, then she hit us with the come on now. We all know that the true measure of a leader is who you lift up. And then the people are like, oh God, that's deep. Unburdened by what has been. That's deep. That's a deep one.
The strength of a leader is based on who you lift up. And it's important for us absolutely to articulate that.
You know, ever since the debate, We feel for our fellow citizens in Springfield. Do you not think about the fellow citizens in Springfield, Ohio, the Haitian families, the non-Haitian families, everybody having to deal with this lie that has endangered the lives of Haitian people and anybody who looks Haitian? Everybody in America feels for that. And I also, everybody in America, left, right, middle, has concerns about immigration.
Yeah.
And I'm told that Justin, where are you in the audience? Justin.
Hello.
In our audience.
Hello, Madam Vice President.
Hi, Justin.
You live in Michigan.
Yes, ma'am.
Don't you love saying hello, Madam Vice President?
I do.
It's a whole section full of simps on the over right-hand side. On the right-hand side. So you see all of the husbands, the simp husbands that's over there? It's a whole room full of simps that's sitting right there. I promise you.
What's your question? It's an immigration question.
My question for you is...
She's asking, what's your question? It's an immigration question. She already pre-planned and have the questions and nothing is off the cuff. Hey, what's your question? It's an immigration question. She called him out and she already is planning to get the question. Jesus Christ.
When you become president, what would be your specific steps?
Help.
Yeah, of course. What would be your specific steps to strengthening the border?
So it's a wonderful and important question. My background was as a...
Let me guess. As a prosecutor, you've prosecuted the people for drug crimes and some of the worst things that's then come over the... Let me guess. You know my record as a prosecutor. I've prosecuted some of the...
Prosecutor, and I was also the elected attorney general for two terms of a border state. So this is not a theoretical issue for me. This is something I've actually worked on.
Okay. Mm.
I have prosecuted transnational criminal organizations. For the trafficking of guns, drugs, and human beings. I take very seriously the importance of having a secure border and ensuring the safety of the American people. Sadly, where we are now can be traced most recently back to the fact that when the United States Congress, members of the Congress, including some of the most conservative Republicans, came up with a border security bill. And here's what that border security bill would have done. It would have put 1,500 more border agents at the border. And let me tell you, those border agents are working around the clock. It would have just been about giving them some support and relief, which is probably why the border agents actually endorsed the bill. It would have allowed us to stem the flow of fentanyl. And I'm looking at people from all over the country here, so I don't need to tell the folks who are watching this what fentanyl has done to families, to kids in our country, and the need to take steps stemming the flow coming into our country and addressing that extraordinary and tragic issue in terms of its effect. The bill would have allowed us to have more resources to prosecute transnational criminal organizations. And it would have been part of the solution. And Donald Trump called up those folks and said, don't put that bill on the floor for a vote. He blocked the bill, and you know why? Because he'd prefer to run on a problem instead of fixing a problem.
Look at all of the sheep. Look at all of the sheep. Do y'all know that that bill was put in place in 2023? Y'all know what I'm going to say. Okay, so for the new people that's here, let me educate you a little bit. Because it's easy to play on your emotions instead of standing on truth. That bill was put in place or was proposed in 2023. Republicans were standing on and have been standing on since Obama got out of office. We need to build a bigger wall. We need to give the border more resources. And this is what we need to rock with. Democrats paired it with the Homeland Security and funding, continuing to fund what was going on over in Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and all of these proxy wars. And they made it a homeland security bill instead of making it a border crisis bill. Republicans said that we need to separate these issues and deal with them individually. And so we don't think that this makes sense. By 2023, after over 2.5 years of them being in office, you know what happens? We already had up to 15 million migrants, illegal migrants, into the country. They had already sued Texas to open up the borders and allow for more people to come in under proposed insane asylum. Once that blew out of the water, then they wanted to act like they wanted to fix the border, but instead they wanted to fund all of these proxy wars, so they tied it to this from what Republicans are saying, and that's why they call it a bipartisan deal, two-party deal, meaning that you get something out of it and we get something out of it. When the bill was killed, you know what they did over the last 2 months, 2.5 months? They stopped the flow of migrants coming into this country by enforcing the laws that we already had on the books. Because you don't need a bipartisan deal to do that. All you got to do is enforce the laws that we have on the books. But they pressed and they advocated and they fought for it and they actually was willing to shut the government down and furlough employees in order to continue to fund to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars to these proxy wars. We still trying to ask the question, how did these Haitian migrants get all the way up to Springfield, Ohio, to the tune of 20,000 and be one-third of the population in the first place? Why don't they have somebody up there that press it? Why don't somebody ask the real questions? Why don't they get somebody that's informed instead of having somebody ask a question that looked like deer in headlights, who was probably given a question to ask in the first place because they know that that's the most pressing issue to the American people? You know why they won't do that? Because it would expose and force them to be accountable for the truth and answer the questions that the American people want to know instead of just clapping on cue based off of a cue card that's given to them.
And he has put his personal political security before border security.
Jesus Christ.
Because understand, even in the intervening months, what that bill would have done to give support to folks who care about this issue. And this again gets to the point about what does leadership really look like? And is it about you or is it about the people? Right. Is it about running on problems or fixing problems? My work and my career has always been about saying, let's fix problems. Let's address the needs because we know it's within our capacity to do.
They're fixing a problem that they created. First of all, how are they fixing it? They're not. And secondly, he asked the question, how will we stem the flow of illegal migrants over into this country? What is your proposed plan? He didn't even ask her, why did y'all let them in the first place? He asked her a specific question. I don't see nothing but word salad. If you let somebody talk long enough, they'll distract you from what the original question is. That's what she does, and she uses the same talking points on everything. I can pretty much tell you how this interview is going to go, and I haven't even seen this interview.
Do that.
So to answer Justin's question, now that that bill has gone and hasn't passed, will you reintroduce that?
Absolutely. And when I am elected president of the United States,
I will sign that bill on day one. Maybe I can go 4 for 4.
Make sure that bill gets to my desk, and I will sign it into law.
A majority of young Americans, 18 to 34, say that the cost of living is their top issue ahead of the election.
Uh-oh, she get an opportunity to talk about the opportunity.
Groceries are extremely expensive right now.
I don't understand how people
She's about to talk about her opportunity economy. $6,000 for first-year new parents. $25,000 for new... Jesus Christ. We capped the cost of Medicare. We've capped the cost of insulin.
Affording life right now.
For so many Americans, the high cost of living is their top concern this election.
Rachel, we have $435 to last until the end of the month. Okay? What?
In Philadelphia, Rachel and Garrett say they have
to watch
every penny.
When I think of middle class, I think about people who are able to just get up and go and do things within their means and like not extravagant things, but trip.
Well, Rachel and Garrett are joining us on Zoom to save money to have a second child.
That's right.
Wait, if you broke, why are you having a second kid? If you... Jesus. Yo, it's so much wrong with this world. And their recently remodeled kitchen.
Hi, Oprah. Hi, Madam Vice President. Hi, nice to be with you all.
Yes.
Hi.
And so, what did you want to say to the Vice President?
So, Madam Vice President...
Just like a man, let his wife speak for him.
President, we are, like many, many young Americans, just experiencing a very high cost of living. We ended up giving up our apartment, moving in with our parents, who were so gracious to take us in for over a year so that we could save money and ultimately buy a home, because that's what we thought.
Uh-oh, 25. Set up questions so they can throw it at the Chris Paul, alley-oop, Lob City. Oh, that's why we want to give you $25,000 for our house.
American dream was to get married and buy a home and have a baby. And now here we are and our mortgage is incredibly higher than what we thought it would be. And my sister and our brother-in-law are living with us right now so that they can hopefully one day do the same. And while it's beneficial for us because they help us pay off some of our mortgage, it's also beneficial for them because they can save the cost of living.
Yeah. First of all, thank you both for being here. And yours is a story I hear around the country as I travel. And in terms of both rightly having the right to have aspirations and dreams and ambitions for your family and working hard and finding that the American dream is, for this generation and so many recently, far more elusive than it's been. And we need to deal with that. And there are a number of ways. One is bringing down the cost of everyday necessities, including groceries. So that's why I'm taking on, for example, price gouging, which is when, you know, most companies and corporations are good, but for those bad ones, they take advantage of people, especially during a pandemic or extreme weather, and they end up jacking up prices, and there needs to be accountability and consequence for that. So I'm going to be taking on price gouging. But it's also about dealing with what we need to do around home ownership, right? Mm. So as someone mentioned during this film, look, I grew up a child of a mother who worked very,
very hard. Mother bought our first. She saved a lot and she saved up and we finally got our first home when we were teenagers. And, you know, my Nana and a friend of ours, she was a small business owner. And, you know, she really, all of our neighbors really loved their lawns. And so, you know, I seen the American dream and I seen how hard my sister and I seen how hard my mother, which we never mentioned a father, but my sister and I seen how hard our mother worked eventually to buy her first home. I come from a middle-class family.
Very hard. She raised me and my sister and she saved up. And by the time I was a teenager, she was able to buy a home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we grew up actually for a long time in an apartment on top of a child care center right. that was owned by the woman we called our second mother because she helped my mother raise us.
Second mother.
So and she was a small business owner, Ms. Shelton.
Owner. Right. Yep.
So I'll bring all this together to tell you the way I think about it is one, when people work hard and have a dream of buying a home, we should give you the opportunity to be able to do that, which is why
I'm going to run on my opportunity economy. And first, we want to give first-time home buyers $25,000. We want to give business owners, because you can't open up a business for $5,000. We want to give business owners a tax credit of $50,000 to be able to open up their own business.
Part of my plan is for first-time homeowners, buyers, to have a $25,000 down payment assistance to buy your first home.
Right, right.
Because people just need to be able to get their foot in the door, and then you'll do the hard work.
Yep.
Part of my plan is what we need to do to support small businesses, because my second mother was a small business owner, and I love our small businesses and our small business owners.
I love them.
They are not only business leaders, they are community leaders. Mm-hmm. They mentor, they hire locally.
They hire local people.
And
yep.
We have so many entrepreneurs in our country who have great ideas, yep. Incredible work ethic, but not necessarily access to capital, because not everybody, like my opponent, was handed $400 million on a silver plate that he filed bankruptcy six times on. Yep. And so part of my plan is to give small businesses a $50,000 tax deduction to start up their small business.
Jesus Christ. We gonna get through it. We gonna do it. Ain't nothing to it but to do it, y'all.
Business. Right now it's $5,000. Nobody can start a small business with $5,000.
Dog! I know word for word. Nobody can start a small business with $5,000 tax credit. So my plan, because, you know, my Nana, we lived on top of a daycare. And Nana, she started her own businesses. And my mother saved for... Jesus Christ, bro. Nobody can start a small business on $5,000, can they?
So that's part of my plan.
That's a teeny tiny business.
That's a business in
teeny tiny business.
Like, it's a concept of a business, right?
Yes.
You know where I'm going. That's right.
And it's part still of, on paper and, with the $5,000.
Right.
It's still on paper.
It just hasn't happened, right? Part of the, to speak to you guys and your family and your dreams, is what we need to do around giving middle-class families tax breaks. And so part of my plan is also
$6,000 first year life of the baby.
Extend and expand the child tax credit to $6,000.
Who would have thunk it? Yo, I would be, if I bet the house like 20 times back to back to back, I would be a billionaire. If I bet the house 60, 20 times back to back to back, I take Kamala Harris for $50 billion, Alex. I'm doing Kamala Harris Jeopardy. If they have political Jeopardy, I'm signing up. Political Jeopardy, I'm signing up.
So that you can, in the first year of your child's life, have the resources to be able to buy a crib and a car seat and clothes for your baby, knowing that's such an extraordinarily important time in their development, and you shouldn't have to worry about how you're going to take care of their basic needs. All of this and more is part of what I plan to build.
An opportunity economy?
I call it an opportunity economy.
Wow.
And it's basically about creating opportunities.
I'm sorry, y'all. I'm sorry. I apologize ahead of time. I have to cut this off. I just do. And it's not that I have anything else to do. It's not that I'm going outside of my time zone. I can't do it. I can't. I am, everything in me is broken. I am a broken human being right now. The fact that I can literally quote word for word what she's going to say before she says it. That's why part of my plan and more is to create the opportunity economy. Oh, Jesus, be offense.